baby back door, baby fall off, sipping codeine cause I got a killer cough. Let me sit sideways in the big bins. Oh, you boys, they my brothers, they my friends.
There's not one guy, one person in the history of this program that's bigger than the program.
Mayfield on play action.
You're listening to Brandon Drum and Parker Thune. This is the OU Insider Under the Visor podcast.
Welcome to another OU Insider Under the Visor Sooners post game podcast powered by Riverwind Casino. Oklahoma 17, number 22, Missouri 6. Defensive struggle once again for Oklahoma, but that's who they are. That's who they are, Parker. That's who they are. They continue to solidify themselves in the college football playoffs. They win. There's a really good chance they stay as home field advantage. It would be really, really wild at this point to move Oklahoma with five top 25 wins out of that eight spot, but the playoff committee has their own brain. We're going to find out on Tuesday. But before we do all that, we have a lot to talk about here. Lots and lots of talk about the offense, the struggles, the ups, the downs, the defensive dominance once again. And we're going to do all that. But first, let's thank our sponsors.
Yes, folks. Riverwind Casino, our presenting sponsor here on the Under the Visor podcast. Riverwind Casino, you know where it's at, right off of I-35, Highway 9. It's been the OKC area's premier gaming destination for nearly two decades now. Almost 3,000 electronic games, table games, bars, and dining options, plus the best live music in the metro. It's no surprise that Riverwind is always a good time. Also want to give a quick shout to Janet King, the greatest team to ever clean, and a proud partner of OU Athletics, delivering spotless results and solutions from stadiums to any size business across the country. Check out which solution is best for you or your business by going to janetking.com. That's JANIKING.com. Brandon, the University of Oklahoma has itself a football team here in the year of our Lord 2025.
The funny thing, look, you said 9-3, I said 10-2, regardless of the fact we were probably on the higher end of the predictions of everybody. We felt pretty good about what this defense was going to be. We felt pretty good about what the offense was going to be going into this season. And it started exactly like we thought it was going to, 5-0, Mateer gets hurt. And the offense has just never materialized into what it was pre-injury.
Pun intended.
Say what?
Pun intended. Materialized.
Look, here's the deal. Is it's just not been consistent. There was flashes today where you're like, oh, okay. They would start drives. They would get rolling and rolling and rolling. And then a hold or just a couple of mishaps, whether it was a bad read by Mateer or an errant throw or something to that extent, that would bog it down. And without Xavier Robinson or Torrey Blaylock being healthy, there's really no coming back from that because it's QB run game or bust when it comes to the run game today. And that was super unfortunate. But look, there were positives on the offense. There were super positives on the defensive side of the ball. This team is 9-2. They have a chance to be 10-2 if they can shut down 7-3 or – 7-4, LSU when they come to town. So LSU's not going to be easy. They've got a ton of NFL talent coming in. We've got all week to talk about that. But that's where this program stands right now, Parker. A chance to be 10-2. That, I think you and I were one of the few OU media likes that had them near that. And here they are. Here they are.
And here's what you can't do, right? You can't order the meal and then complain about the recipe once it gets delivered to you. Because if the Sooners go 10-2, regardless of what happens in the postseason, the year 2025 the season that is 2025 is a smashing success for this football program. I would argue that regardless of what happens next week against LSU, yes, it would be monumentally disappointing if Oklahoma were to lose that game and choke away a chance to compete in the college football playoff. They may still be in, even if they lose next week. They have a strong enough case as it is, an at-large team. But this team has met or exceeded even the loftiest expectations that people placed upon them preseason. I don't know that anyone predicted that Oklahoma was going to be anything more than 10-2. And so even the 10-2 folks, if Oklahoma wins next week against LSU, they have satisfied even the 10-2 folks. So look, is this an imperfect team? Is this a team with flaws? Is this a team that has some very, very obvious imperfections? Yes, without question. At the end of the day, they are capable of playing with and beating anybody in the country because they have the nation's best defense. I would go as far as to say right now that they have the nation's best special teams unit.
Yeah.
And the offense is just kind of so-so. Would you like to see more progress in that department? Absolutely. Do you know that that offense can play better and that John Mateer can play better? Yes, because you saw it early in the season. But regardless of how far Oklahoma stretches this thing in the college football playoff, provided they get there with a win next week, I'm so impressed with this team, man. I truly am. I am so impressed with this team. And here's why. Winning is hard. Winning is especially hard when you're in the Southeastern Conference and you have to deal with that meat grinder week in and week out. And this team just keeps on winning. They find ways. It doesn't always look the exact same. It doesn't always look pretty. It's not always aesthetically pleasing. It certainly wasn't today. But this team wins football games. And they fight, and they stay together, and they rally behind their leader in Brent Venables. And they have proven time and again over the course of the season that regardless of what the external expectations are for them as individuals or as a team, man, they care about one thing and one thing only, and that is handling the business that is in front of them. That is three consecutive ranked wins. Brandon, five on the season. That's the most in the country. First time in a decade that Oklahoma has five ranked wins in a season. But that's three straight opponents that they have had to go and beat that were ranked in the AP top 25. Of course, one of them, Alabama, was an AP top five team. How many programs across the country can say at any point this season that they beat three ranked teams in a row? I don't know the answer. That's a sincere question. If anybody wants to bother to do that research, by all means, let me know. But the baseline reason, and maybe this is not hard-hitting, super nuanced analysis, but the baseline reason I am so, so impressed with this team is because they just keep finding ways to win. They know who they are. They play to it. And when they need a play here, a play there, a moment here, a moment there to establish that upper hand, to solidify that upper hand over the opponent, somebody goes and makes it happen.
This team, you can call it special, you can call it whatever you want. They have it. And what I mean by it is it can't really be quantified. And why it can't be quantified is because I think if I was to pick a team, and I said, OU is going to go against, let's say, Oregon. And I was going to say, you aren't going to know the script of how this game is going to play out. But it's going to be a slugfest because both are good at defense. And you say that after USC went up and down the field on Oregon most of the day. But that's Lincoln Riley calling the plays on the other end. So it tends to happen sometimes when he's calling the plays. But whoever it is, Oklahoma's playing whoever. And you've got to go in blind, taste test. You don't know the script. And you have to pick a team. I would pick Oklahoma at this point because I know I'm going to get two things. It's called, you're going to get that. Like, that's what Oklahoma does. They're going to give you a touchdown or two because that's what they do. Number two, that defense is going to shut down whoever they play and minimize whatever offense they're going up against and make them one-dimensional and make them 75% of what they are against everybody else because that's what they do. And number three, I know if it comes down to special teams, Oklahoma is going to win that battle because that's what they do. Doesn't matter who the opponent is. They have the best field goal kicker in all of college football. You get across that 50-yard line, you got 3 points, Parker. You have 3 points.
Yep.
You need a punt. Look, Miller's been good. He struggled a little bit today. He was a little errant on pinning inside the 20. But when it mattered most, he had, I think, two or three straight punts where he just pinned Missouri inside their own 20. Inside their 10, two in a row, mind you. You need punt return. Satania's gotcha. He's electric when he wants to be or when he has a chance to be. He's going to get some chunk yards for you in the punt return game. So to me, and if you want field goal blocks or punt blocks or fake punts for success, Oklahoma's done that too. So like they are, you don't want to say a complete team because they certainly are flawed offensively. But I think of the three facets of the game that you play with on every Saturday, Oklahoma's probably about 85%, right? Like, I don't think they'd be any lower than 85%. And I know there's going to be some people that are going to say, look, you're crazy, Drum. Offense is awful. They don't do this. They don't do that. They played today with no running back, essentially. Mm-hmm. And the running back that they had got 46 yards on – literally out there, like, he doesn't have legs right now. He has zero knees right now, people. He has two sprained knees, and he's out there running. And he gained 46 yards and averaged almost 4 yards a carry on two sprained knees. So I think a fully healthy Xavier Robinson, the game probably is a little different, much like Mississippi, right? He became such a big factor, much like Tennessee. He became a big factor in that game. When he's healthy in the second half, Xavier Robinson eventually wears people down with his power. He couldn't do that today. And so you were counted on John Mater, and he ended up with 60 yards rushing. But I just think a fully healthy Oklahoma offense creates a team to where they're 85% of just a three-facet team. If they can ever get to be 90%, Parker, because that's generally about where people are at, and you're cutting, right? Like, some people are missing some of the special team facets, right? Some people are missing some of the defensive facets. Oklahoma's missing the offensive side. If they could ever get that, Parker, this team could be downright special. Downright special.
And I think that's what gets you so excited about what the next couple of months could hold for this team is because, you know, like, all it takes is for the offense to get back to playing the type of football that they were early in the season. And this team could win a national championship. They could.
I don't think they will, but they could.
I don't think they will either. I wouldn't predict that. But this team can play with and beat anybody in the country. And you know what's interesting is that, and I was saying some of this as well, but especially after the Tennessee game, I remarked, and I think so many had the sentiment that really didn't feel like something you could repeat. That doesn't necessarily feel like a sustainable formula for victory. And then they went and beat Alabama, and it was kind of the same thing, right? This doesn't really feel sustainable. And then they come back home and they beat Missouri, and you have the exact same sentiment. I see people on Twitter, people on the message boards saying, how sustainable is this? Well, they keep doing it. So at what point do you just say, okay, maybe it shouldn't be sustainable, But by golly, for this team, it is.
It's who they are. It is who this team is. And again, you know, I'm not patting my own back, but I said, what if this is who they are after Tennessee? But I said that kind of in jest. I didn't really mean it because I didn't believe it was sustainable at that point. After Alabama, I was a believer. After today, just like, you know, you're going to show up. It's going to be a grind out, just as Brent Venables calls it, a grimy game when it comes to Oklahoma, because they want to make it grimy.
Well,
that's what they want to do.
And here's the other thing, too. The style of football that Oklahoma is playing right now is on the completely opposite end of the pendulum from the last great teams that the University of Oklahoma fielded on the gridiron. Mm-hmm. All the teams that competed for college football playoff berths and were solidly up there in the very top tier of college football from the years 2015 through 2021, all of those teams were predicated on explosive offense. They were going to outscore you.
Even 23.
But here in 2025, Oklahoma is the diametric opposite of that. Mm-hmm. They have an absolutely devastating defense and an offense that's just kind of ho-hum. They'll get the job done more often than not, but your formula for success is predicated upon the success of your defense and your special teams. And so that's why I think it can be so difficult for certain folks to get themselves to believe in this recipe and this team, is because it just feels so different from what everybody became accustomed to for almost a decade with Lincoln Riley.
Yeah, this look, Brent Venables has been building. You can see it. I think 23 was the first year where we could kind of see Oklahoma was on the cusp of turning this thing into a very defensive heavy program. They had their moments in 23 where you're like, okay, well, this is what it's supposed to look like defensively. 24, that's exactly what it was. The offense was just, you talk about, everybody wants to complain about the offense this year. Do you all remember last year? If there was going to be a turnover that was going to happen, Oklahoma was going to give the ball up. And that, I think, of all the things that you look at negatively at Oklahoma offensively, you have to give them props for taking care of the ball each and every game. That's what they're asked to do. We've been told that you've got sources, I've got sources. They have literally been asked, don't turn the ball over. Just don't turn the ball over. We're going to win with special teams and defense, and if you go down and score, great. Great. We want that. But what we don't want is more possessions that the defense has to account for already. And they're doing it. Mateer, he's got like 20 lives. He's like a cat with like 20 lives instead of 9 lives with the way he somehow interceptions never take place with him anymore. It always goes through the defender's hands. God bless him. If you're an OU fan, you hope that continues. And there's other teams, Parker, in past that have gone on and done exactly, played offense exactly how Oklahoma's playing offense, by the way. Ohio State in 2002. Clemson, essentially, for long periods of time was playing, not winning, but they were playing for national titles. They won a national title when Trevor Lawrence and Deshaun Watson, when Massage Boy got there. And just that changed their whole facet. They became almost unbeatable at that point with those two at quarterback. But they had lapses, right, where the defense carried them to the playoffs, right? Carried them to the Natty or the national semifinals. What were some other programs? Alabama, for years, was horrible on offense. Their defense carried him, Parker. I love Greg McElroy. Wasn't a great quarterback. Was he? Wasn't great.
He was not great. AJ McCarron wasn't great. They won a national title with Jake Coker as their quarterback.
You're making my point for me, Parker.
Exactly.
You can do it. You can do it with this. This is a formula that works. Special teams defense can win you a lot of ball games and can carry you through the playoffs.
Yeah. And obviously, they played 4-1 titles during the Jalen / Tua era, of which there was a couple of years of overlap. But at that point, I mean, they already had, what, 3-4 championships under their belt. Mm-hmm. So you could start recruiting elite dudes at quarterback at that point in time.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, Jalen wasn't great to start. Oh, by the way, I know this is kind of off topic. I wish I could find it somewhere, but OU beats Alabama, and look who is on the Jumbotron saying there's only one Oklahoma is none other than Jalen Hurts. That was a nice little chef's kiss by the OU production team. Because did you expect that? Because I know I didn't expect that. Because it's always been, is he OU or is he Alabama? Is he OU or Alabama? And he always says roll Sooners,
mm-hmm.
right? But he's on there showing that he still loves the university. And there's only one, Oklahoma. And then they run out. That was cool. That was a really nice touch, particularly after the Alabama win. It was almost like a slap in the face, by the way, to Alabama once again. Anyways, I digress. Your thoughts on what did you like about what John Mateer did today?
I liked that John Mateer was a lot more aggressive than he had played really in any game since returning from surgery. It felt a lot like early season John Mateer, and he didn't hit on a lot of the shots that he took. Let's be frank here. There were at least 2 or 3 pass interference flags that could have been thrown, and one could argue should have been thrown and were not thrown. And we're not for that. I mean, you're marching the ball 15 yards down the field on some of those downfield throws that he attempted. Deion Burks on multiple occasions was the guy that he was looking for.
Yeah.
Downfield. And Isaiah Satania, he took a couple shots to Satania as well. My thing is, and this goes back to personnel. This is not John Mateer. If you're going to throw one of those 50-50 balls down the sideline, or you're going to draw up one of those plays where you can take the 50-50 shot down the sideline where you got a guy in man coverage and it's a one-on-one matchup there, I would be a little bit more comfortable throwing to a JerMichael Carter or a Javonte Gibson or somebody that naturally is going to have a bit more of a built-in advantage.
Yeah.
In making a play like that against a defensive back than 5'10" Deion Burks and 5'10" Isaiah Satania. But that's neither here nor there. Like, I love the fact that John Mateer was making an effort to push the ball downfield, and I love that Ben Arbuckle was making an effort to get John Mateer pushing the ball downfield. Again, it didn't feel like they hit on one today. Did they? Did they hit on one?
No,
offhand, it felt like.
No, they didn't
hit on one. It felt like there were several instances in which they were, you know, it was close, but no cigar.
Yeah, Satania dropped one that was just perfect.
That's right. That's right.
It was a dot.
So, to me, and John Mateer was on the money with basically all of those throws, right? Like, all of those passes were highly catchable. It was either, well, I guess what you could call good defense to the point of being borderline pass interference by the defender in several cases, or, you know, Satania just
borderline's being it. Nice.
Mm-hmm. But I actually, is it a hot take to say I liked the way John Mateer played today? Because I did.
No.
I think if that's the version of John Mateer that you get next week against LSU and then moving forward in the college football playoff, you're going to convert some of those shots. Those are going to turn into big plays. Those are going to help you sustain drives. And ultimately, that'll help you put points on the board. And so it felt like a legion of missed opportunities in that regard today for Oklahoma. And that certainly contributed to the offense's overall inability to consistently move the ball downfield. But I feel like if you kind of stick to that exact same script moving forward, some of those are going to start to go your way. And that could do wonders for this offense. Also, it ought to be acknowledged that, as you referenced, with Xavier Robinson banged up, Torrey Blaylock banged up, and nobody else really trustworthy in that backfield, the Sooners just didn't have much of a running game outside of John Mateer himself, and couldn't really have been expected to have much of a running game outside of John Mateer himself. So get past LSU. You get 3 weeks off. Guys can get healthy before the playoff rolls around. And at that point, I could be at the point, and I'm not saying I'm there right now, nor am I insinuating that, but I feel like I could be at the point where December 19th rolls around, or December 20th, whatever day it would be that Oklahoma's playing in a first-round college football playoff matchup, and I genuinely at that point am feeling pretty dang good about that unit.
Yeah, I think it'd probably be good for Oklahoma to get 3 weeks up. It's going to be fantastic. They're going to be healthy going into the playoffs, assuming, right? Like they get through LSU, they're going to be healthy. And you have time to really work on some things. You always notice like bowl games are kind of a precursor to what you expect the next year if you have a lot of people returning. Well, Oklahoma is going to have a lot of dudes returning on offense, and they're going to have a fair amount on defense. Like I think the defense is going to be fantastic again next year, because you're going to have a really loaded defensive front to really lean on, and a linebacking unit, allegedly, potentially, as long as Kip Lewis doesn't dip out. They should be really, really good at linebacker and defensive back, by the way. God, yeah, they're going to be good. Oh, my gosh. Like, the more you think about it, like, this team has a chance to be, like, preseason two or three, something like that, maybe top four, top five. Type of program, but yeah, they're gonna have a chance, man, to really fine-tune some things. They just have to get through this next week to get dudes healthy, and it's not going to be easy. You kind of saw that today without having Xavier Robinson or Torrey Blaylock at your disposal to be a consistent run game. It hindered the offense quite a bit. Even so, I thought Mateer, he wasn't great at passing. He missed some really easy targets. But when you take in consideration that this is the best pass defense in all of the SEC that they were facing today, and you had an 87-yard touchdown.
Mm-hmm.
Right after, you probably could have had it on the play before, by the way. They're behind. Satania had nobody around him. Could have probably walked into the end zone from 87 yards on that play as well. Well, back-to-back plays, he connected the second time around. And I think that's what you like about Mateer. He doesn't let a previous play cost him later on in a game. And that, in big ball games, we've seen that comes into play a lot, because he makes plays that, you know, my brother texted me that. And so did another guy today. One of my friends said, you know, Mateer drives us crazy because he makes plays, big plays. And he turns around and does something. We're like, why did you do that? Or why were you so off on that? But he's a gamer. And gamer-type quarterbacks tend to make plays when they need to be played, need to be made, and he did it again today. And so I think overall, he did okay. Didn't do great, but he did okay. He did good enough to win the ball game once again. And if that's the material you're going to get, is good enough to win every game, I get it. It's not pretty, OU fans, but you're going to have to get used to it, at least for 2025. For 25, because I think next year, when the offensive line is older, when you've added a big name transfer portal wide receiver to go along with Satania, when Xavier Robinson and Torrey Blaylock are a year older behind a really good offensive line, I think the offense, and when Ben Arbuckle is in year two of the SEC, when he's had time to learn, right? He's learning on the fly. And one of the toughest defensive conferences is all, maybe the toughest defensive conference in all college football. He's learning on the fly. Just take it for what it is. You're winning. You're 9-2. You have a chance to go to the playoffs and host. If I told you, Parker, at the beginning of the year, the offense isn't going to be very good at the end of the year, but you're going to be potentially 10-2 hosting a playoff game, and you're just a regular old fan, you take it?
You don't have to qualify that at all, Brandon. You don't have to, and I know for some people they may not agree, but for me, you don't have to qualify that at all. If you tell me Oklahoma is 10-2 hosting a college football playoff game, I would not care if they won every single game 6-3.
Yeah.
What matters is winning. And as I talked about to open the podcast, this team has demonstrated that they are just really, really good at winning and finding ways to win.
They're Notre Dame of 2024. That's what they are. I know I said that in a rapid reaction, but I just keep harkening back to, what was the quarterback's name last year for them?
Riley Leonard.
Riley Leonard, yeah. I knew it was Riley. I just can't remember the last name. Riley Leonard. He and John Matera are very much the same. Not great passers. They're good passers. Not great. They're very strong runners. I believe Riley Leonard was a bit banged up last year, much like John Matera. Obviously not to the extent John Matera was, but he was a bit banged up last year. He got healthy as the season went along, and the offense got better and better and better. They weren't ever putting up a bunch of big points. It was kind of the final week against UCLA. Who was it the last week they played? Was it USC, their final game last year? Or was it who was it last year? I can't remember. They put up points.
Yeah, I don't remember.
I think everybody was kind of shocked. It wasn't. It may have been Navy. I can't remember where it was. Doesn't matter. But I know they put up some points, and everybody's kind of shocked at how the offense looked. And then they went into the playoffs, and they were just a complete team until they faced Notre Dame, until they faced Ohio State. And if I sit here and told OU fans that's how it's going to turn out, and you end up playing for a national championship, I don't think anybody gripes about it. I think you're okay with it. And I think every OU fan should be okay with it. As long as you're coming out with a W. What was Brent Venables' quote today? What did he say? My wife texted to me earlier in a group text. Oh, my gosh. What was it? It's not pretty, but it's not a beauty contest.
Mm-hmm.
And he's right. As long as you're winning, who cares if it's pretty? Who cares? Keep winning. The only thing I would say is that it may hinder them hosting. Maybe the committee moves them back because they're not a complete team, but I think that would be foolish of the committee to do. We've seen them do something like that before. I just think it would be foolish. The eye test, and they pick and choose, like Travis told us, right? When they want to use it. If they want to use it against OU, that's their thing. Cool. Let OU go up to South Bend. I like OU's chances. I like them. So, but you'd rather host. You'd rather host.
Consider this. When we think about that defensive masterclass that Venables unit put on today. And by the way, I will officially throw this label down. Brent Venables naming himself the defensive coordinator for the 2025 season is the best decision he has ever made as a head football coach.
Agreed.
By far, it is not even close. That is the decision that has been the most positively impactful for Oklahoma football since he took the reins. when we think about that performance today against Missouri, in which the Sooners surrendered two first half field goals and then nothing the rest of the way, Missouri's seven second half drives concluded in a punt, an interception, a punt, a turnover on downs, and another interception. They did all of that without their best defensive player in R. Mason Thomas, which testifies to just how deep and just how talented this roster is. Oklahoma really, and it's completely, it's nuts to say this. It is wild that you can say this sentence and that it is entirely true. Oklahoma has not missed a beat since R. Mason Thomas went down.
No.
They have not missed a beat. At no point have you found yourself saying, "Oh shucks, really wish R. Mason Thomas was out there." That is going to be a high round NFL draft pick in April. And this Oklahoma defense is good enough that nobody has been talking for the last 3 weeks about how R. Mason Thomas is unavailable and not playing right now.
No. I actually think that worked in OU's favor against Missouri, because I think for what R. Mason Thomas is, it was probably more beneficial to have bigger body defensive ends out there with how they like to run the ball. And so is it weird to say that, like, his injury may have actually been a blessing in disguise, because you don't have to play a 250-pound DN? I'm not saying he's not a good DN when it comes to the run. He is. But I will stand my ground and tell you, Marvin Jones Jr., Taylor Wine are better against the run than he is. And I don't think anybody – I don't think that's even arguable, Parker. I don't think it's arguable.
On that note, Ahmad Hardy, the nation's leading rusher, managed all of 17 carries for 57 yards today against that Oklahoma front. This is going to be such an obnoxious team in December and January. This is the type of team that if you're sitting there, number one, number two, number three in the country, if you're one of the top teams in college football looking at your potential draws in the CFP, Oklahoma's going to be one of those teams that you got circled. Don't want to play those guys.
No.
Do not want to play those guys.
No, because it'll, if you're, let's say you're Ohio State, you've been coasting through the Big Ten, and let's be real, Ohio State's schedule is crap. They have, who have they beat, Parker? Outside of Texas, who have they beat?
I mean, I couldn't even tell you what their best win is outside of Texas.
My point. Did they play Indiana this year?
They did not play Indiana. Those two are undefeated. So they had played. One of them.
I forgot. Yeah, that's right. Indiana's undefeated. I don't know why I thought that. I was trying. They played Penn State, right? I believe, correct?
They did play Penn State.
Yeah. I
their best win other than Texas is either, maybe Iowa? You could argue from a roster composition standpoint, even if the record doesn't indicate it, Penn State. If we're talking resume, if we're talking current status on the hierarchy of college football, their best win outside of Texas is Illinois.
That is weak. Weak. And I'm not saying Ohio State isn't one of the best teams. If they probably didn't, right now they're the best team in college football. And they've proven it by how they are a complete team. Well, it's like when Oklahoma played in the Big 12, right? Like, it feels like you're really, really good. You're dominating all these other teams. And then you play an SEC team or a Big Ten team that has, when the Big Ten was like really good back in the day. And you got a wake-up call. You weren't quite as dominant as you thought you were when everything's equal. That's kind of how it will be if Oklahoma faces Ohio State. Now, I'm not saying OU will beat Ohio State, because I don't believe that. I do think they'll scare the crap out of them, because the defense will be havoc. You give Brent Venables a week or you give Brent Venables multiple weeks prepare, and that's what we'll have in about 10 days, 11 days. After you play on the 20th or the 19th for December 31st or January 1st, right? I like their odds, Parker. I like their odds. I like their odds after 3 weeks of sitting at home, knowing who you're going to play and preparing, because that's what they did. Look what they did to Michigan. They prepared for them all fall camp and shut them down. So I just look at that type of thing. And if Oklahoma can get through LSU, this is where it's at. And the way you do that, Parker, is you have players like Taylor Wine, the way he played today, again, the way Owen Heineke played today, again, the way, by the way, Dominic Williams, hello, pass rusher. That's been almost non-existent all year. And then look at him. He's got, I think, had a sack and a half today, right? Hello.
Remember when Dominic Williams was the bell of the portal ball last spring? And now
he's really good at
now he's guys. Oklahoma's fourth option at defensive end. And to be clear, like, again, that's not a dig on Dominic Williams at all. He's awesome. It's just that is how good Oklahoma is at defensive tackle. You have Jaden Jackson, David Stone, and Grayson Halton that are all out snapping Dominic Williams.
Yeah, they're insane there. David Stone was awesome today, by the way. And we talked about on the rapid reaction, he didn't get a sack. He didn't get a TFL. But every time Bo Perbulo thought he was going to escape, Zero was there ready to bear hug him, saying, "No, brother, let's go down to the ground. Let's get out here and cuddle for a second." So, like, it just – he – that defensive front – did Jaden Jackson go back in, by the way?
I can't recall. I don't think he did. I could be mistaken. I don't think he did.
How was that not a question in the post game? It's because the defense played so well that people just...
Well, again, it's because you didn't really miss Jaden Jackson.
Yeah, you're going to need him against LSU. For sure. Just because that...
like, is it weird that I'm sitting here thinking, like, is there any individual player that this defense needs?
I mean, look, RSU there, went out.
Like, if R. Mason Thomas isn't integral to the success, the overall success and flourishing of this defense, who is? Who can't Oklahoma's defense lose, whether short-term or long-term, and continue to play basically the same level of football? Well, it's a machine right now.
I'll name one. One guy, I think, changes everything if you miss him. Who do you think I'm thinking of? He's kind of Swiss Army knife.
Kip Lewis?
Kendall Daniels. He does everything. Plays so well out in space. Great blitzer. Really good run stopper. 6'5", 240 pounds, kind of the prototype cheetah that Brent Venables wants.
Yeah.
I think he changes.
I guess he does. My only rejoinder to that would be with the obvious acknowledgement that Kendall Daniels adds a ton of value for Oklahoma and has played really well. Mm-hmm. Would you be that much less confident if it were Reggie Powers functioning in that role? 50 snaps a game for Oklahoma?
I don't know that I'd be that much less confident, because I think Reggie Powers is going to be elite before it's all said and done at OU. I just think for what Kendall Daniels is now, I had somebody tell me last week, they just brought him up and they're like, he is so good. He changes so much of what we do defensively and allows us to do some things that other teams can't do because of his versatility. And they said if he would have been at Oklahoma for 2 years instead of just one, he's probably a first-round draft pick. And that's the sad part about this.
He may be a day two draft pick this
year. No, they said he was. Yeah, they said he was. But that's still, you're losing millions of dollars out of the deal. I will tell you this. Kendall Daniels, after every game, he seeks me out now just because it's become kind of a thing, a ritual, since they started winning. at Alabama, I told you this, he said he's never had more fun than he has now playing football. And I love to hear that. I love that so much because, and you can see it in his face, right? In the interviews, he's always so happy that you can just see he's at peace about where he was at, where he's at in his life and with the team. And so that's a really cool deal. But yeah, I think you probably, I think Reggie Powers would be able to do some of the things that he does. I think his size and the way that he can blitz is special. Because remember when OU got him out of the portal, like that was a big deal. Everybody's like, oh, that's Isaiah Simmons. That's Isaiah. And that's exactly what he turned into.
Yep.
That's exactly what he turned into. Speaking of Isaiah, Isaiah Cetania, he had the drop. But does it not feel like every time a big play needs made on offense?
He's there, man. He's the guy.
He's your dude. Particularly in the passing game. He's your dude. Is he the fastest player in the SEC? I just feels like he just runs by everybody. He jogged. That dude was sprinting as hard as he could, Parker, the Missouri defender. And he was jogging, just looking back, you're not catching me, brother. Sorry.
When that dude kicks it into fifth gear, ain't nobody staying stride for stride with him. He is fast.
It's insane.
He is also 174 receiving yards away from being the second Oklahoma wide receiver of the decade that is the 2020s to cross the 1,000-yard threshold. The only one to do it, Marvin Mims.
Who was in town today, by the way.
He was, yeah. A lot of NFL alumni, or a lot of OU alumni that are now in the NFL, made their way back to campus for this game.
Denver Broncos represent.
Can I also say this? I know everybody was rightfully enamored with Many Men being the pre-fourth quarter song. That was awesome. Loved it. But also, I've mentioned it before, but maybe not in such strong terms, and maybe I haven't emphasized it the way I would like to emphasize it. The atmosphere at Owen Field has been unbelievable all year. There has been a measurable difference in just the overall stadium environment this season in 2025, as opposed to really any year in the past that I can recall. Oklahoma has a legitimate home field advantage in that venue for the first time in a long time here in 2025. And it helps, man. You can tell that defense feeds off it in particular, because you got some juiced up characters on the defensive side of the football that just, they've got a ton of energy as it is, but you get that crowd roaring, you get the music pumping. Guys like Kip Lewis, guys like Taylor Wine, David Stone, Cortland Guillory. It's dudes like that that it feels like they take it up even further. They take it up another notch.
I think that was the idea when you moved to the SEC, was to make that happen. You get a lot of ranked teams coming in, right? Like Ole Miss, top 10. Michigan, top 15. You get Missouri, ranked 22nd. Who was the other home game they had? Auburn, top 25. Yeah. So they had nothing but top 25 home games this year, outside of, you know, the non-con of Kent State. Illinois State. But Illinois State's one of the better, you know, FCS programs. But that's neither here nor there. But that's what happens when you have excellent opponents coming in. Next year is going to be just the same. You're going to have, I believe they got to go to Michigan, but they got Texas A&M. I believe you get, is it Vanderbilt? Who was the home game? I tweeted it out yesterday or last night, earlier this morning. But that's what happens, man. I think I think winning also changes Parker. I think the excitement of winning makes everything more, I guess, I don't know, exciting. I just was looking at that gun, man. I was trying to find last year's or 2026. As far as ranking, here it is. So the home games next year will be Kentucky, Ole Miss, South Carolina, Texas A&M, New Mexico, UTEP. But the fact that you would expect South Carolina to be really good next year, again, they're going to have Lenore Sellers, all those guys, right? I don't think Lenore Sellers is going to leave after the year he's had. And I don't think he can either. Texas A&M, obviously they're going to be really good. Ole Miss, I mean, Kiffin or no Kiffin, maybe Drinkwitz is there. Maybe it becomes a rivalry that was supposed to, because Drinkwitz is going to go down to Ole Miss and back up what Kiffin did and talk that, you know what. So I don't know. But it's the home games, man. I think the home games, the atmosphere. So you got to give up to the fans. They showed up. They've been excited about, you know, the opponents. And the crowd has been loud. Do you think it's the defense, though? Do you think it's the defense being so fun to watch and so exciting with the big plays that the defense makes all the time? Do you think that amps up the atmosphere? Because it's generally when it's louder.
I mean, obviously, yeah, there's something of a symbiotic relationship there. I mean, the team plays better, yeah. The crowd gets louder, the team plays better, right? So everything kind of feeds itself, if you will. You have that cycle, but the energy has to come from somewhere. Like if you trace it back to an origin point, there has to be some organic energy in the building to begin with. And there has been more organic energy at Owen Field this year than any other season I can recall by far.
Yeah, no, I agree. The Bowen brothers, the last three games, have they not just been special? Everything that they were supposed to be, they've become. I asked Peyton Bowen about that today, and I'm interested in your thoughts on this. And he said, it's just a comfortability. Like they know each other. They've played around each other. Obviously, they grew up around each other. The one-year hiatus, you know, freshman Eli Bowen's senior year. Peyton was hurt half that season. Last year, they kind of came together. You know, this year, Eli missed quite a bit. And Peyton didn't look like Peyton to start the year either. But did it not feel like when Eli got healthy and he started to play, Peyton's performance raised quite a bit? And as Eli starts to get more comfortable, obviously his performance goes up, but Peyton's is going up with it. It's like they try to one-up each other, right? He blocks a punt or he blocks a field goal. Nah, brother, I'm going to get the interception. You know, it's outside of the Selmans, they have to be the best brother tandem, right? Or brothers in OU history. Mm-hmm. I'm trying to think who else. I guess Tinker and Steve Owens.
I mean, the thing is, you know, Peyton's a junior, Eli's a sophomore. There's still a lot in front of them. I'm excited to see what else they do, but they're both making big plays time and again over the course of what has been obviously such a special season for OU's defense. And Eli's interception, I mean, that was a desperation heave by Prebula. That's kind of just a stat pattern.
Minimize it.
It is. It's kind of just a stat pattern of a pick, but he played really well, right? It's not as if the interception is the only thing he did all day. And then Peyton Bowen coming up with the block kick, man. The crazy thing is, he almost got the first one.
Yeah, he did.
He may have actually gotten a finger on it.
No, he said he didn't.
He didn't?
Yes. No, he said, okay. Yeah, he just said, that was just a crappy kick.
He almost got that first one. And so when they lined up for the second one, conventional wisdom would suggest, okay, make sure you block 22 this time. Mm-hmm. They did not block 22, and he made them pay for it. Which, that's what he does, man. That's what good football players do.
Yeah. He said
don't
that
account for him. Assault. You don't neutralize him. They'll make something happen on you.
No doubt. He said there was something they saw in the film. And so they just tried to attack it.
And by the way, that's how you know you have a good special teams coordinator.
Yeah.
Shout out Doug Deacon.
Yeah. So I look, the Bowen brothers, Jacoby Johnson play out of his mind today. That was one of the cooler interceptions I've seen in a while from OU, just as far as like the acrobat of it. Like he was fully extended. And mind you, this is a dude that's like 6'2". He's a big dude. And he was fully extended. Wasn't even supposed to be in that position, by the way. He just sank. He said, nobody crossed my face. I'm in cover three. I saw the over route, he said. So I just shot back and said, I'm going to go. It's exact words. I'm going to go help my teammate out and see what we can do. And he said, I saw Perbula's eyes. And he goes, when the ball got in the air, he said, I knew I had it. But that was an amazing interception because he had to come from the other side of the hash and shoot back to go get it. Just showed his athleticism. And then they played him the rest of the game. Like he did not come out after that. And they attacked him. They tried him a couple of times on the goal line and he just shut him down. There was a third down, Parker. They were trying to get a quick slant on him and he was manned up on Kevin Coleman. And he bullied Coleman at the line and caused Grayson Halton to get the sack. I just, like, that was by far Jacoby Johnson's best game he's played as a Sooner. Not even close. Just another weapon, man. Like, they are so deep on defense, it's not even funny. So deep. I thought the offensive line actually played halfway decent for Oklahoma today, too, by the way, against a really good
defensive line. It's a fun ride, man. It's a fun ride. Oklahoma's good at football again, and there's nothing fluky about it.
Nope. It's awesome.
That's the great thing about playing SEC football is you cannot write a run like this off as a fluke.
Yeah.
Because you don't get to 9-2 in the SEC if there's anything fluky about your football team. This team's a contender. This team is to be feared, to be taken seriously by the other contenders in the field. And provided they get past LSU next week, man, they're going to give somebody hell in the CFP.
It's going to be awesome, man. Well, let's get our MVPs, players on offense and defense, and we'll shut this thing down. I will say offensively, I'll go Isaiah Satania. Big play. I think did he end up with over 100 yards receiving today? He did, didn't he? Right, 109. Yep.
Mm-hmm. 309 on three catches. 109, three catches.
Three catches, yeah. So I'll take Isaiah Satania. Big day for him. He essentially had 75% years passing yards thrown to him. Not really. I think it was like 65%, but he had the vast majority of the passing yards went to number five, and rightfully so. On defense, I'm going to take Jacoby Johnson. His play kind of changed the fabric of the game after Reggie Powers got ejected for the targeting. It felt like things could swing in Missouri's favor at that point, and that the momentum was trying to shift. And the very next play, he just kind of slammed the door on that. And from that point on, Oklahoma dominated. And even Brent Venables said that was kind of the pivotal moment of the game, that it just kind of flipped on its head at that point, and Oklahoma took over. So I'll take Jacoby Johnson as well with his big day that he had on defense.
I will go ahead and take Taylor Wine as my defensive MVP.
It's a good one.
He's got to be in the all SEC conversation, mm-hmm, at the very least. If he's not at least second team all SEC at season's end, there is something wrong with the process, because he is, I would say, in an overall sense, with the obvious asterisk that our missing Thomas has missed two games. Well, two and a half, almost three games, because of the targeting foul that he incurred against Temple earlier in the season. I would argue that over the course of the campaign, the season in its entirety, there has been no more impactful defensive player on Oklahoma's roster than Taylor Wine. He was exceptional again today. That has become the standard for him. He is emblematic, a case study in everything that it takes to excel in Brent Venables' scheme and on Brent Venables' roster. Man, you have to be patient. You have to be tough. You have to have an insane work ethic. You can never be satisfied. And when you pair all of those things with some God-given gifts and abilities, you got something really special. And Taylor Wine is something really special. Offensively, I would give it up to a guy that didn't make a huge dent statistically, but I will actually go with Xavier Robinson as my offensive MVP, just because he was there. He played. He carried the rock 12 times when a lot of guys that were dealing with what he's dealing with, were they dealing with what he's currently dealing with, would have just sat out. And so I commend Xavier Robinson for, at the very least, creating a threat in the run game that Oklahoma could use to their advantage in scheming and play calling.
Timber Creek, represent, baby. Let's go, Xavier Robinson. No, neighborhood, baby. Let's go. He is so tough. What Brent Venables said today, I know we're trying to get out of here, but I just wanted to just kind of piggyback of what you said about Xavier Robinson. Show my bias. I'm super biased towards him too, but and I'm okay with that. What Brent Venables said, most dudes, like you said, would have just missed the game. He walked in on Monday and said, put a brace on it, coach. I'm playing. Don't even put me on the availability list. None of that stuff. I'm playing. You're not stopping me. He had to put a brace on his right knee today too, by the way. Now, he had two knee braces on by the end of the game. That dude is so tough. Two sprained knees. So tough. Good on him, man. That was a unique offensive pick, but I respect it because of where it came from and why you said it. So, and because he does mean so much to the team as far as like the offensive output, and you can tell when he's not healthy, the offense isn't the same. So that's a good pick. Really good pick. All right. That's going to do it for this version of the OU Insider Under the Visor Sooners postgame podcast powered by Riverwind Casino. Subscribe to this YouTube. Give us 5 stars. Give us likes. Whatever podcasting platform you listen to us on, please, please, please. It helps us keep this free. We keep bringing content to you guys free. The more you subscribe, the more content we provide. And if you haven't noticed, we've been providing a lot of content lately, because you all have been subscribing at an enormous rate. I think we've gone up almost 1,000 new subscribers this month again. Thank you, Sooners fans. Thank you, thank you, thank you. We do this because of you guys. Similarly, if you're not on OUinsider.com, that's essentially the best way to follow us. It's the way we report recruiting information, injury notes, breakdowns of stuff that we've heard behind the scenes on a daily basis. We have VIP chats where you can ask us insider stuff. Parker and I will answer your questions every day. We're on the board talking to thousands and thousands of OU fans that are already on there. You start your own threads. You get access to every On3 site, whether Oregon, whether Alabama, Notre Dame, Texas, Texas A&M, Arkansas, Oklahoma State, doesn't matter, Missouri. You have access. You can go look and see what they're saying about OU fans or OU in general. You can go check out LSU's site, the Tiger Bengal or whatever it's called. What's it called? Is that Bengal Tiger, right?
Bengal Tiger, yep.
BengalTiger.com. Yeah, like it's a really, really cool deal where you get access to all those sites, get to check and see what they're saying about Oklahoma prior to the game, post-game, recruiting stuff, oh, who's OU's got a recruit? They're recruiting against each other. OU's trying to flip a player. What's that other site saying? Go to OUinsider.com right now. Click that green button that says join now. And you can join OU Insider for $1 the first week. It's a really, really good deal. We hope to see you there. We've been growing fast, and we thank you guys so much for that. Like, seriously, like when we say that, we mean it. Like, thank you, thank you, thank you, OU fans. We enjoy being on this ride with you guys, and we do this because of you all. So thank you guys so much once again. Again, go to OUinsider.com, click that green button, $1 the first week, plus you get the athletic for a whole year complimentary on OU Insider and on Three. So it's a 2-for-1 deal to get a lot of great content on a daily basis. For Parker Thune, my name is Brandon Drum. That's going to do it for this version of the OU Insider Under the Visor Sooners post-game podcast powered by Riverwind Casino. Number 8, Oklahoma, 17, Missouri, 6. We will see you guys on Monday with the post-practice blitz and a ton of other content coming your way right here on this YouTube and the podcasting platform. Have a blessed day.